I think in that way, a lot of the sort of traditional research around psychology doesn't really meet the needs mm-hmm. of people in a sports setting, and that and positive psychology does.
Welcome to the Mindset Coach Academy podcast. I'm Lindsay Wilson, and I am a high-performance mindset coach, a mom, a former professional athlete, and an entrepreneur. I help coaches and high performers optimize their mindset to improve their coaching, their performance and those of their athletes, and their lives. Here you'll learn all about mindset, how to live it, how to teach it, and how to sell it. Hi guys, and welcome back to the Mindset Coach Academy podcast. My name is Lindsay Wilson, and today we have Chris DeSantis, who has his master's in sports psychology. He's going to give you a little background on himself. But I'm really excited because Chris and I met, I don't know, a couple months ago, and we just started nerding out on this, which is like my favorite thing to do on podcasts. And I was on his podcast, and then we started talking about him being on our podcast. And we started talking, I was like, wait, save it all for the podcast. So that's what we're doing today. And we're really diving into his expertise in positive psychology. So if you've ever wondered what positive psychology actually is, today you're going to learn. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Hi. I'm good. How are you?
Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you.
Glad to have you on our show. I had so much fun talking to you on your show. So before we get into positive psychology, I just want to pick your brain on all of it, but tell us a little bit, what's your 30-second spiel on who you are and what you do?
Oh my gosh. I am a coach. I have a coaching business. I work with teams and I do individual one-to-one coaching. My background is, as you said, I was actually the first athletic coach in the world to get an advanced degree in positive psychology. I did the Masters of Applied Positive Psychology program at the University of Pennsylvania. I was in the fourth ever graduating class. That was in 2009. And I've also been a swim coach my entire adult life. So a lot of the stuff I've been doing is in and around the sport of swimming. And that's primarily the teams and individuals that I work with. But the cool thing about positive psychology and the thing I'm always thinking about when I'm out working with these teams is, you know, people say like, oh, you do individual coaching in swimming. Like, are you telling people how to like, you know, do their freestyle, right? I was like, nothing that I talk about is specific to the sport of swimming whatsoever.
Right.
Basically, it just so happens I end up in front of a lot of those audiences.
Sure.
Because that's my community. Those are the people I came up with. But nothing about this is specific to swimming.
So I misspoke. So your master's is not in sports psychology. It's in positive psychology. But since you're a sports guy, you apply it to sports, which is even cool.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Yes. Awesome. Okay. So broadly, and this is what just totally piqued my interest, and I know our listeners are just going to eat up, is what is positive psychology?
That's the million-dollar question, and one that I have had a hard time. Well, I'll tell you, when I went through the program, there were a lot of people at that time who said, like, let's figure out a way to describe what we're doing and not call it positive psychology. And I think that's changed. I think now, like, I'm excited to come on a podcast and have people like, can't wait to hear about positive psychology.
Yeah.
But in those days, I think back in the dark ages, 2009, when I was doing it, you know, it people thought of like Tony Robbins seminar or something when positive psychology came into their mind. And by the way, I think Tony Robbins is amazing.
Right. It's like the Matt Foley on Saturday Night Live, right? Like
what he does, but there's some people that don't take what he does very seriously, right? And so the fear was, you know, we're trying to be real, like, research-backed science people, and we can't have people comparing us to these, you know, like, entertainers.
Right.
And so positive psychology was founded as a field in the late 90s by Martin Seligman. He was president of the American Psychological Association, and the idea was simply psychology for the previous 100 years or so had been totally fixated on pathology, right? What is wrong with people? How do we fix it? And through his work, Martin Seligman said, you know, I think maybe it's time to go beyond fixing problems. And this is where I get excited about it in the context of sports, because the idea of positive psychology was not what's wrong with people. Let's look at what's right with people. And how do we get more of that?
Yep.
How do we augment that? And I think that goes to the core of what we're doing at sports. You know, like we're not trying to be okay if we're doing something competitive. You know, especially the people you and I work with, we're trying to be great. We're trying to do better than we've done before, or we're trying to do better than some other people that we're competing with. And so I think in that way, a lot of the sort of traditional research around psychology doesn't really meet the needs of people in a sports setting, and positive psychology does.
Yeah. Well, and I also think of it just like, I mean, so much has changed in the last few years, just with COVID and mental health and all of that, but in particular in sports, the last, I don't know, maybe 10 years or so, when, you know, I remember you first saw, you know, LeBron James breathing, and Tiger Woods was finally talking about the fact that he did hypnosis, and, you know, Love was talking about mental illness, and there was all these kind of like things that happened for good. But I think in some ways it was also like sports had to also get to the pathology part of like, there are these problems and we also have this other part, which is what you and I do, and so many of our listeners do, which is the positive stuff. Have you seen that like both things are so important, but they kind of have to work together in a lot of ways?
Well, I mean, you're speaking to something. I had my business. I mean, I really split it into two eras. There's the pre-COVID era and there's the post-COVID era. I mean, no, but pre-COVID, yeah. I think in a lot of sporting settings, me coming in and saying like, hey, I think, you know, you should incorporate some positive psychology into your team, right? Or marketing some of what I was doing, people were like, oh yeah, that sounds cool. And there were some people who I think were ahead of the curve at that time and really got it. But COVID, I mean, was for so many things, it was just like a tidal wave. Yeah. And as it swept across, it left in its wake a lot of people who were thinking a lot about this. And quite honestly, like I work with a lot of colleges, and, you know, I saw in the colleges after COVID, they said like, oh, we better have some resources for this. But what I was hearing from a lot of the coaches were pretty frustrated with the resources. First, they're inadequate to like the demand of people that we have that want to actually work on stuff.
Yeah.
And second, you know, they are like the pathology piece of it. The only tools we're giving people on our team for communicating come from, you know, this pathology world. So it's like there's no way for communicating about thriving. It's like you're depressed or you're not depressed.
Yeah.
You're anxious or you're not anxious. Right. And I think that's just kind of unsatisfactory in a lot of sports settings.
Well, and it's so reactive, right? I mean, I kind of think of it as, you know, like marriage counseling, like wait until you're struggling, or just like try to fix your problems as they come up, you know, and also focus on what's working, or like your car, like you do regular maintenance so that maybe it doesn't break down as much.
Well, one of the ways I look at it is, and the role of, and I think, you know, there's a lot of similarities between our work. One of the ways I talk to people about it now is if you're on a sports team, like if somebody gets an injury, right, you got physical therapists, you got doctors to come treat that injury. Mm-hmm. You also have a strength and conditioning coach.
Right.
We're strength and conditioning coaches of the mind.
Yeah.
We're not therapists. We're not there necessarily to like, you know, fix a broken leg.
Right.
We're there to make you strong and less likely to get injured in the first place.
I love that analogy, because as athletes, like you really do understand that it takes both, and it's not one size fits all. And there's no shame or judgment if you need more help, but it's all like, this is just, I love the wave of like I remember this when I first started working with teams, and I was like, if you do it for a few years, guess what happens? The freshmen come in and they're like, this is just what you do in college. They don't know that not every college trains their mind. They don't know that right. at that level, this is actually an anomaly. I mean, it's not so much anymore, but it was 10 years ago. And I was like, that's the cool part is that they don't know any different. It's just like yeah. strength and conditioning. You come in and like, you're going to be lifting weights, period. Everybody's doing it. That's not an right. option. It just is part of training.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure the first year a lot of colleges introduced a strength and conditioning program. There were yep. people like, there's somebody in the background going like, oh, I don't know about this. It's going to make them too bulky and they'll be too stiff to be able to compete. And like, yeah. you know,
yeah, totally.
30 years later, it's just like, everybody's doing it.
Totally.
So I think we're probably like
yep.
maybe 10 years into yep. a 30 year process yeah. of this becoming the norm.
So let's talk, you know, I love in my work and just in this podcast is really like actionable things. So like if there's a coach listening, maybe it's a swim coach, maybe it's a soccer coach, doesn't really matter, right? That's listening to this and like, okay, positive psychology. Like how does that actually work in my day-to-day work? Like I see in my athletes, again, some of them are struggling with like maybe some mental health issues but let's just talk about like the general struggle of just trying to be your best, right? And also the things that are working. Again, like you said, we're trying to get kids or athletes to be thriving. So like as a normal everyday coach, like what are some things that they either need to be thinking about or doing? Like what are some low-hanging fruit, actionable things that coaches can do?
This is a hard question for me, only because I'm going to launch into some answer that's way longer than what you asked for.
That's okay.
But the only way that I can start is by just giving you an example of a positive psychology approach. I mean, okay. I really think the answer in general to that question is anything that has to do with what your kids, what you as a coach or the kids that you coach or the adults that you coach are thinking and feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. In and around what you're doing, there's an opportunity there in positive psychology. And again, the key part is the terminology I just used. There's yep. an opportunity. Let me give you an example. Okay. This one's fresh from, I was working with a team earlier today.
Okay.
And I had surveyed this team and I'd given them a list of topics. And I said, you know, what do you guys most want to hear about? And they voted, and overwhelming, you know, number one for this team was, want to talk about fear of failure, right? Mm-hmm. Now, traditionally, any situation like fear of failure, I was somebody that, man, did I struggle when I was a college athlete. The story I tell was, you know, I have a lifelong love of the sport of swimming. I still compete in swimming at age 40. Yeah. So I think that tells you something about the longevity of interest I had. But when I finished in college, I was having such a hard time around competition that I remember being in a locker room afterwards thinking, thank God I never have to do that again. I mean, I had turned something that I have a lifelong love in into a miserable experience. Mm. And a lot of it had to do with how I was dealing with the thoughts and feelings that I had around competing and failing and whether or not I was going to do well. But so many people look at that situation, right? And their frame for it is, I have this fear of failure. That's a problem.
Mm.
And I don't look at it through that approach. I don't think it's a problem mm-hmm. in the first place. I mean, I can see how people can have a process that is leading them to have a hard time, but at its core, I don't think something like fear of failure is actually a problem. So the work that I do is actually teaching people what's going on. How do you get to that point where you express that I am fearing failure and teaching them to build a different pathway. I mean, it's really, it's like, In in therapy, and I'm in therapy once a week. So I don't want anyone to think anything I'm saying is against the traditional psychology world. I use it in my own life. I highly recommend it for other people. You know, cognitive behavioral therapy is the gold standard. Mm-hmm. The stuff that I do is cognitive techniques for building a different pathway so that you're experiencing the same emotions around a situation, but you actually build a thought pathway to a different outcome for you in your mind while you're doing it.
Just to dumb it down for me, do you mean reframing? Or do you mean like just like the cognitive behavioral of like almost like metacognition,
I would say,
of like how you're thinking about your thoughts or how you're feeling about the thought?
I would say reframing, yes. A giant, like reframing the entire understanding that you have of how these processes are working and what is going on. Again, if I use the example of fear of failure, I don't consider that a problem, because how do you get to the point where you would express like, oh man, I'm really overwhelmed in these situations, and I'm thinking about what's gonna happen if I don't do well. If you zoom out on that, mm-hmm. and I do this with athletes all the time, you got an athlete that cares mm-hmm. a ton about what's going on. Yeah. I tell people, that's not a problem.
Right.
If I had to make a team of 100 people, give me 100 people that fear failure, because that's 100 people give a crap about what is happening. Like, I will coach those people all day. I can't do very much for the people who aren't feeling anything in and around what they're doing. So I will take those people all day. And they, to me, are typically people who don't understand the role that failure plays in long-term success, right? Because it's kind of a paradoxical situation. The more successful you are, the more there's like a natural ebb and flow to this stuff. The more successful you are, the more actually vulnerable you become to failure. And what naturally is supposed to happen is you're supposed to tip over and have a divot.
Yep.
And coming out of that divot, exponential growth.
Yep.
But a lot of people block themselves off from that growth because they come into the divot and they just say, oh no, this is bad. I'm failing now. Like, and they just want to run away from it full speed, like it's a problem, but it's not a problem.
Oh my God,
and if you can get to the other end of it, that's where all the good stuff is.
Oh my God. Do you know how, like, okay, I don't know if you feel like this, but like the things that I'm teaching or experiencing in my own life, like they just keep coming, right? So like the funny mm-hmm. thing is like, you're saying this, and yesterday on our inside, my coaches in our Mindset Coaching Collective call yesterday, I literally said like 10 different times in the call was, failure's not a problem. How you feel about the failure is the problem. Like,
yeah,
that is like the thing that's going, we were actually talking about obstacles. It's like, failure's not the obstacle. It's how you feel about the obstacle. And it also makes me just realize like so much of this is like the stuff we're all learning about parenting too. It's like, it's not the feeling that is bad. It's like the discomfort with that feeling. Am I on the right track with all this? Cause everything you're saying is like so resonating.
Yeah. Hey, I have a 9-year-old and a 5-year-old. I know you have three kids.
Four
kids. I undercounted you by one. Okay. So you're twice the parent I am, but I'll still cite my experience
with
my two children. I mean, I will say, I walk this walk. One of the frequent sayings in my house is you can feel however you want to feel. You don't get to act however you want to act, but you get to feel. Like if my kids are just blowing a gasket, I'm like, be as angry as you want.
Yeah.
You can be as angry as you want.
Yeah.
You can't scream and hit me.
Yeah.
I'm going to draw a boundary on that behavior. And I think this, I say this to coaches all the time, because they're trying to, I think a lot of coaches are trying to navigate the line, like, how do I let people express themselves emotionally or actually like feel what they're going through emotionally without having an environment that's just like anything goes,
right?
Where people are just acting out in whatever way they feel is appropriate. And as I said, you can still set boundaries on what is appropriate behavior within your team, but you want to have a system where it's like, feel your feelings.
Yep.
Let it loose.
Well, I just love this. Okay. So if we could get a little granular, I mean, the zooming
get
out
as granular as you want.
It's helpful, but I also, so, I mean, I think what I'm hearing from you is coaches, like the very first step with all this is like, let's take that fear of failure or whatever, that in and of itself, I don't even know that I would say it's positive. You're saying that it's positive. It's just neutral. That is not a bad thing. And then you're even going the next step and saying that it could be a positive thing because you're finding, you know, that those are the athletes that really care. But am I like, that's kind of like the first step for coaches is like whatever they think is a problem. Maybe
be
not.
Willing, be, yeah. Have an open mind that you could turn it all on your head and like internalize some of your own messaging. I mean, when you communicate with a lot of coaches, they go, well, you got to be willing to be uncomfortable. You know, you got to step out of your comfort zone. So with the material, like the stuff that I am going to go do with teams, that's my message to them as well. Be willing to be uncomfortable. I was, I live close by Princeton University. I'm working with their men's swimming and diving team. And I really pissed some guys off the first time that I went and talked to them, to the extent that, you know, afterwards, two guys went up to the coach and said, like, I don't want to hear from this guy anymore. Well, okay. which was hard. But I'll tell you what I said to push them there. And then I'll sort of talk about how that's an example of having an open mind and being willing to go to an uncomfortable place.
Yeah.
The thing that I said when I was talking to these guys is, I said, I am really grateful for the worst things that have ever happened in my life. And the two worst things that I cited in my life, I'm 40 years old, who just passed, or we're coming up on 8 years since my mom died of a brain tumor. Horrible. Okay. It was her birthday in October. I can tell you, I was feeling profoundly sad that day. And despite the fact that I am grateful on some level for that experience, if I had the magical power to bring my mom back to life, I would. However, the growth that I got from that moment was something that, like, you can't recreate with, you know, peaches and sunshine. You can't. Yeah. It was so freaking hard that it changed me.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm proud of the person that I am now, and I am proud, then I'm grateful for it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm grateful for it. And so these guys were just like, no. You know, like, I'm out. I can't. That's too much positivity.
Yeah.
And I go, that's just like, that's actually just more honesty. And being willing to actually look at situations, because I think one of the things, and this is probably another piece of positive psychology and why I think positive psychology is so important, I think we're all born with a negativity bias.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to work at that.
Right.
Like, we're all naturally talented, pessimistic. There's a good reason for that.
Yep.
You know, it kept your great, 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 great grandparents alive.
Yep.
Pessimism is great in a life or death situation.
Yep.
But we're not naturally talented at being hopeful or turning a situation that's really hard and really, really traumatic for us into a positive in our lives. That takes practice and work.
Yeah.
You have to work at that.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is such good stuff. So again, we're talking about if a coach wants to sort of switch, I mean, what you're basically saying is they need to switch this in their own mind first. But if is there a way that you can simply explain what it would take to take that fear of fail? I understand the first step. The first step really is how we think about it, right?
Sure.
And is that the only step? Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, that can be transformational. I've seen that with my students and myself, like the cognitive behavior, like how we think about something and reframing it can like change the entire thing because it changes how we behave. It changes our results, like everything. Are there more steps? Again, like I'm a coach, I'm listening to this and I'm like, what can I do on a Tuesday afternoon to help my team be more positive psychology-ish, right? Like we take that fear of failure, which is a really common one. Like what other steps did you take that team today through, if anything? Was it just really helping them see the entire picture of that experience and that thought?
Well, I mean, there were, I'm pulling up my notes as we talk about it that I talked through, but, because I talked for probably just 40 to 45 minutes on that. And I know we have like 10 more minutes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, another step I think for understanding that is, I think part of the cognition that people have around failure comes from a bit of mythology when it comes to visualization.
Okay.
Visualization, big topic. I remember like coming up in the sport of swimming from when I was a very young age, you know, they would have us lie down in a room and close our eyes and you imagine yourself swimming the whole race and you touch and you like, you know what your time is and all this stuff. I think visualization is amazing. And it's validated, and it's this superpower for, you know, practicing something before you've ever done it in your real life. But a lot of people look at the inverse and they go, if you think about failing, right, that makes that failure outcome more likely to happen.
Yeah.
And so their next step from that is to go, well, I'm not going to think about failing. But to me, that is a recipe for thinking about it more because you don't allow yourself to. So I actually teach people to plan on failing.
Yeah.
Because if you don't plan on failing, then you never, your subconscious never progresses beyond that first step. Mm. It never, it brings it up. It goes, what if we fail? And you go, no, we're not thinking about that. Mm-hmm. And it'll remind you, it'll go, by the way, you still haven't come up with a plan for when you fail and you go, no, I'm not going to think about that. Hey, one more time. So what if this goes bad, right? Yeah. It'll actually make you think about it more versus sitting down and thinking like, okay, and so what if everything goes to shit in this? What am I going to do? How am I going to feel? What are the reactions are going to be of people around me? Who are the people I can lean on in that situation? I mean, building up that infrastructure. And I notice in high achieving people, again, they're resistant to that because they think that that is somehow manifesting failure on the other end.
Mm.
But first, I think it's actually a recipe for thinking about it less. And second, if you really want to be successful in the long term, you want to fail big.
Yeah.
You want to, because that's where, again, you get the big growth on the other end. So it's not that, you know, the cognitive link on the other end, it's not that you're never going to fix the problem. You're never going to. And I think any solutions that treat it as a fixable problem, I don't personally like those because I don't think it's a fixable problem. You'll keep on coming up. I'm 40 years old. I still get super emotionally invested before I compete.
Yeah.
But the difference now is when I imagine it going bad, I have the life experience to go, well, that'll be good too.
Yeah. I love this. We talk about negative visualization in our performance visualization specialist, but we talk about it more as a way to get excited and get your adrenaline system going. But I love this because, again, we were talking about this yesterday of we were talking about anticipating obstacles and anticipating failure. And similar to how we talk about like mistakes or a reset ritual, like we know they're going to happen. And I was laughing because it's like, as driven people and people that influence others, I mean, all of us have talked to a young person or someone that we lead and said from our conscious, rational brain, failure is a part of success, right?
Yeah, like, we've repeated the mantra, right?
The bumper sticker. And yet, when it comes to our own life, it's like, but no, it's not a part of success because it just hurts so much. And so this idea of anticipating it so that you have a plan makes it less scary. But I really also love like, and what we know about the brain, like it's always looking for a solution. So if you haven't actually given it a solution and like kind of finished the story on the failure, it's constantly going to be seeking that, right? I mean, isn't that how the brain works? It's just looking for a resolution essentially.
And it's going to stay stuck on that step.
Yep.
And it actually, it cuts you off from the growth.
Yeah.
On the other end, because, you know, you're right. It's a big, ugly emotion. If you really care about what's happening, it's going to be really big and ugly on the other end. Yeah. And that level of emotion will make you dumb. I mean, you're not going to be able to come up with a plan in the moment. That's the thing.
There's no way.
Part of positive psychology, right, is like planning on. Actually, as you say, like we use the analogy of a strength and conditioning coach. You're building a plan for moments where you're going to be dumb and you're not going to be able to come up with a plan. And you need to have something automatic in place that you've developed over a long period of time so that you actually have a chance of capitalizing on that situation versus it being a missed opportunity. And I think a lot of people miss the opportunity in that.
I'm laughing because yesterday we were all kind of brainstorming and we came up with like, put a post-it note on your desk that says, get some peer coaching or reach out to an entrepreneur friend when the next time you hear no or your launch fails or whatever, you know? And it was like this like almost too simple thing, but we're like, you don't think of those solutions when you're in the middle of it. You just... You know, if you're lucky, maybe you think of some things that you can do, like journaling or, I don't know, taking a bath or something. But like, you forget that there's all these other things. And so thinking about it ahead of time, I just love this. I think this is really like a really next level preparation for improving. I think it's just great, Chris.
And I can tell you how I lived it. I mean, I said I've been going out to some colleges and I had one school that I visited this fall. And, you know, I was doing some things with how I was presenting and I got to the end of the presentation and I felt good about the material I presented, but I just looked at the audience and I was like, not with me.
Yep.
Not with, they're just not there. You know, you can tell the difference. And I left and, you know, it came up in my mind. Ah, you screwed that up.
Yep.
And I went, no, don't worry about it. Now you screwed that up. You know, it kept coming back to me. And I said, well, what do you got to do? I said, go to the coach of the team. And I wrote him and I just said, hey, I've been thinking a little bit about the presentation and I really could use your feedback. And I want you to like be 100% honest with me. Yes. And he told me some stuff in that, which is like, this is another thing I coach athletes up to do because I think so many coaches right now, especially with the discussion going the way it is around mental health and pathology, things are getting linked to like, coach said this and that caused me to be depressed. Yeah. That's stopping coaches from giving real honest feedback to people.
I've heard that.
Which is actually what you need to thrive.
Yep.
It's the necessary ingredient.
Yeah.
When I go out to teams, like the athletes will report to me, like, I don't think coach is leveling with me.
Mm-hmm.
And the coach will be like, I can't level with them.
Yep.
Because X, Y, and Z. So I said, like, level with me.
Yep.
Sit there. And the feedback that he gave me just like launched what I was doing into the sky. Did it hurt so bad? It hurt so bad. I mean, for days I was like heartbroken. I was like, and it's so intensely personal because I have this business. It's all me. It's Chris DeSantis coaching. I can't go, hey, I got to talk to that guy in presentations. He's really, really screwed it up. You know, like I'll have a chat with them and we'll do better next time. Well, it was super personal and it was super like you, there's only one person who can fix this.
Yep.
But I think it gave me empathy for the situation that a lot of athletes are in.
Yeah.
And what I coach them to do, I got to walk my walk.
Oh, amen to that. Chris, I loved every single second of this. I mean, I think that the things that I'm taking away are that one, just your definition of positive psychology. I think it's such an important thing in sports. And I think it's something that so many of us are trying to do. But I think with the recent stuff, I think a lot of times we are focusing on like what's not working or the negative part or like the really serious things. And there's still this huge, and which are important, but there's still this huge opportunity to like figure out what's already working and get people to the next level. So I love that. And I love just this idea that like things aren't broken necessarily. Sometimes they are. And again, that's a different thing. But for what we do, it's like, it's so much of like what is working and the things that are challenging are not the problem. It's how we think about it and being able to shift our thinking can really make the difference in just like everyone's experience. Because if it is like this fear of failure, if we think that that's a bad thing, then like that's going to color all part of the culture of any team. I think that's like really
absolutely deep.
And then finally that negative visualization and really planning for failure and using it in such a positive way. I also just love Chris because I think that like so much of like positive psychology and being positive, there's just like so many like misnomers in that. It's like all we talked about today was negativity. You know, like and just like it's not about just being positive all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and I just think that that's
not telling
so powerful
everybody they did a great job.
Yeah, this is like real.
Patting everybody on the back.
No, this is real. And this is like deep work, you know, just because like the positive stuff, I think, like you said, it's like, it just got to be like, okay, if we're just positive all the time. No, it's actually about feeling really uncomfortable things. Like,
and it's
actually harder to be positive. Like you said, the negativity bias, that's easy. That's so easy.
Yeah.
Anybody can do that.
Right. And I think if you're a coach and you want to push people really hard, then positive psychology can really help.
Yes.
I mean, it's there.
Absolutely.
And that's not an assumption that I think a lot of people have. I definitely, in my first year out of the program, I had an athlete, you know, and I was giving her some tough feedback. And she said, "Aren't you supposed to be the positive psychology guy?" And I said, "Yeah, doesn't mean I just pat you on the back all the time because that doesn't work."
Yeah, that's awesome. Oh my God, I love every part of this. Okay, Chris, tell our listeners where they can learn more about you or get more information.
Go to chrisdcoach.com. You can listen to my podcast, The Swim Brief. I know it's got swimming in the name.
Yeah.
I promise you a lot of those podcasts are pretty similar to what we had today. Yeah. And I have another coach on there. I'm really... some of them are just me. Some of them are that other coach. We just talk about the art of coaching. Okay. Cool. That is really the core of that. So Swim Brief Podcast, that's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Christy_coach on Instagram, CD Swim Coach on Facebook. You can reach out to me on any of those platforms. Cool. Lindsay, thank you very much.
Thank you. This was awesome. We'll talk soon. I just love picking your brain and appreciate you taking the time and giving us some good parenting tips as well as a bonus.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Talk soon.
Goodbye.
Hey guys, real quick, if you're a coach trying to look for the next thing to do to improve your own coaching, to understand mental training on a deeper level and to take it to your team, I highly recommend checking out Psychology of Competition. This is our course that's, I think it's $297, and it really breaks down pre, during, and post competition routines
and what we teach, like if we were going to come in and work with your team, any of our certified coaches or a specific athlete on your team that wanted to improve their consistency, their confidence, their performance, we would teach them these skills. And it's really simple. It's really it's really easy to implement, but they are very, very powerful. And if you want to do this with your team, it is the most cost-effective way to do it. It will improve your coaching. There are tools that you can implement for your own competition on game day, your own mental approach to competition. So if you're looking for a way to improve your coaching, maybe you've thought about getting certified, but you're not ready for that or what have you, and you want something that's simple, that's affordable, I highly recommend checking out Psychology of Competition. It's on our website at positiveperformancetrain.com if you click on courses. It's a DIY course. You have lifetime access, and it gives you all of the tools, the worksheets, the videos, the MP3s that you can implement this with your team and improve their performance today. Click the link in show notes or go to our website to get yours.